You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, driving from Joburg to Clarence recently, I was struck by the very conditions of the roads that I drove on. From the excellently maintained but tolled N3 to the pothole death traps of the rural Free State, there is a clear and growing disconnect between roads under different government authorities and how they're funded and maintained. It almost goes without saying that the South African Transport Network plays a major role in the economy of the country and the well-being of society as well, safety and security. The network comprises road, rail, air, sea transport, and all of those systems. And South Africa's economic growth, competitiveness, and improvements in the quality of life really depend on the robustness of this transport network. It's the arteries and veins that give life to the country. Investment in transport infrastructure is a propeller for both economic and social development, and road transport remains the dominant mode here in the country, and investment in roads constitutes a major part of the government's capital stock. And the strategic goal obviously being to protect and maintain and develop the current transport network, and that requires integrated transport planning and a framework that meets clear strategic objectives for industrial development with links to things like distribution zones, promoting transport corridors for passengers and freight, as well as promoting tourism so that people like me can travel safely to Clarence. Now, in 2014, the road maintenance backlog was reported as being 197 billion rand, and some recent studies estimate that to be over 400 billion rand. Well, to talk about where the rubber hits the road as we assess the state of the country's road stock and how to improve it, I'm joined now by Basil Johnson, Operations Director at the SA Road Federation, Saeed Solomons, who's CEO of the Southern African Bitumen Association, and Wayne Duvenage, the Chief Executive of OUTA, the organization undoing tax abuse. Basil, just kick us off. Tell us a little bit more about the SA Road Federation and who you represent.
Thank you, Michael. South African Road Federation was formed in 1950. We're a member-based organization, a non-profit organization, and the main thing is we run a lot of training courses to upskill engineers, those that have finished their tertiary studies at universities and universities of technology. We run conferences on roads, that we have international conferences every 4 years. So we're very involved with the Road Federation. Also, we look at road safety as well, which is a really major driver as well. We run a lot of training courses on road safety and road maintenance as well.
I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit later on about our engineering capacity and whether or not we need to be importing Cubans to help us plug the gap. Saeed, the South African Bitumen Association, I read articles almost every year about a bitumen shortage in the country. Tell me a little bit more about the association and the work that you do.
Michael, thank you for the opportunity. The South African Bitumen Association was formed way back in 79. And it started off as dealing with national specifications, and of course it mushroomed over the years. We have membership across the industry, from bitumen producers, which is really the oil industry, to road contractors, to asphalt producers, and secondary binder producers, different types of bitumen used on the road. Universities, consulting engineers, and laboratories and so on. So it covers the full spectrum of the industry. And we focus on keeping the standards of bituminous products at the highest global level. So we get involved with South African national standards and specification for all bituminous materials. And we write guides, books, knowledge, how to, and all those are freely available on our website to whoever wants to download them. and we kind of facilitate these matters in the industry as well. We provide training, specific training in those niche areas. We also have training courses which we offer via the South African Road Federation, all bituminous material related. We engage government on matters concerning the industry, and we focus on environmental and sustainable matters for the industry, which we also publish guides and material on. And so it's a kind of an active industry, But a little bit under the radar. although many people use bitumen every day, they hardly know that they do use it. Yeah. But being as it may, we try and make that a bit more visible as we go along.
And I was saying off air how I think most road users don't understand how integrated, how important the road industry is to the country, to our engineers, to construction. Yes. Many listed construction firms have had to hive off their road building divisions because during the state capture years, it just really wasn't enough work coming to market. But let's dial it back a little bit. And maybe, Basil, you can just describe the extent of the country's road stock. I was reading somewhere that it's in the top 10 in the world in terms of kilometers that are tarred. Just how big is the South African road network and how is it broken down? Who manages national, provincial and local government roads?
Thank you, Michael. So you rightly said South Africa has the 10th longest road network in the world, 750,000 kilometers of roads. That includes, obviously, gravel roads and paved roads in that as well. So we really look at the paved roads and the gravel roads and not the smaller tracks and those kind of small roads in that as well. So SANRAL, the South African National Roads Authority, they look after the national roads, which take, you know, all the freight in there as well from Gauteng down to the coast, to the ports, to Durban and Cape Town and Port Elizabeth, or, And then you have the provincial roads where you mentioned, you know, traveling in the Free State where they carry all the provincial traffic, and then obviously the municipal roads that we experience in our municipalities around the country as well. So they look after that. And, yes.
And it's a question, really, of assessing how we fund maintenance, because I'm sure most people viewing this will encounter 1, 2, 3, 10 potholes in their daily commute. When it looks like the foundations are in decline, it's because they are. If you look at the research, since 91, there's been a steady decline in the condition of our road network. All of the leading indicators point to that. Where is the funding shortage? Perhaps firstly, how are roads funded before we get to this issue of where the shortage is?
Well, they're funded through a couple of mechanisms. Obviously, tolling is one of them. These are through public-private partnerships. They work well in the greater scheme of things. And e-tolls is a separate matter. I'll talk about that. And so funding comes from National Treasury largely. For the non-toll roads, about 85 billion rand is funded to Treasury just through the fuel levy today. That's gone up substantially over the last decade. And then Treasury is also entitled to add other allocations. So SANRAL gets around 15 billion rand a year because not all their roads are tolled. They manage about 22,000 kilometers and only about 3,000, I think, are tolled. But the biggest issue is, as you say, the minute you go off the national road network, and I must say, SANRAL do a good job in maintaining those routes, but you go off those routes and it's a nightmare. The provincial roads, the regional roads, and right down to local government. And what's happening is a lack of maintenance, and that's because local government and provincial government is broke due to mismanagement, corruption, maladministration. You add it all up. And the sad thing is that you see it also in water and other infrastructure, but it's a case of, well, that road will last another year. We don't have money. We're not going to resurface it now. And we'll push it another year. And this delaying of maintenance becomes a problem. And then you can never catch up, as Basil will tell you. Once you get beyond a point of no return, you can't repair potholes all the time. You have to resurface. And in some areas, they're just taking the surface off because it's actually better to have gravel. As you see in a number of the rural areas, than a potholed road, which is extremely dangerous. I must say, came back recently from Kimberley on a route that was so potholed, cars were going driving on the opposite sides of the roads into oncoming traffic just to avoid, at a slow speed, very dangerous potholes. And I think the question, and Basil, this may be something we need to talk about, is this accountability. 3 years ago, the road from Frieda to Memel was redone. 3 to 4 years, it was a nice road. 3 years later, it is diabolical. It is potholed again. What are we doing about the construction companies that are providing very inferior work? That accountability is missing in action. And so we have a serious problem with our deteriorating roads now at national, or more so provincial and local government.
And it is a serious problem. I experienced a very similar thing. I think it was on the R26 where you had to avoid oncoming traffic, and it was a hazard. So much so that one would seriously reconsider whether or not you're going to go revisit that little hamlet of Clarence again, which really relies on local tourism to survive. Basil, to that point, where is the accountability for, let's start with shoddy maintenance, shoddy work done, where tenders are awarded and 3 years down the line we see the road falling apart again?
Thank you, Michael. Yes, so it all depends. If it's on provincial roads, obviously it's the provincial roads departments that will put out the, what we call routine road maintenance projects. But those kind of roads that get rebuilt or resealed like that as well, that's a more substantial contract than that as well. There is some good news. There's two projects that the government's been involved in, the Rural Road Asset Maintenance Grant and the Provincial Road Maintenance Grant. And they have put some money into that over the last couple of years. They've done quite a substantial amount of work, but we as a Road Federation feel that's far too little. They need to do a lot more than what they are doing at the moment. That is our stance at the moment. There is good work, but we need a lot more to do a lot of things. And even in, as Wayne has said, even in municipal areas, we have very bad potholed roads in that as well. Mm. The pothole is really the outcome of not doing the proper maintenance or the timeliness maintenance and that as well. So our biggest challenge is to keep the water out of the road. The water causes the major problems that causes the potholes. So if you can do the resealing, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done, which doesn't cost a lot of money up front, but if you leave that over time, as Wayne has said, the costs just really escalate. So we always say that we need to have what we call PMSs, which is pavement management systems that municipalities and provinces need to put into place to identify where the worst roads are, to do those upgrades first, and not allow those roads to deteriorate to a point where they are potholed.
When we, as engineers, obviously talk about pavements, they actually are talking about the surface of the road. And for us road users, when we look at pavements, we just see pavements overrun with weeds and all those other things. Now, Basil, when we look at the size of the funding gap to maintain and improve our road network all across government, at national, provincial and local level, what are we talking about here? Because I mentioned quite a big discrepancy in figures, and I haven't been able to pull an exact number through the research that I've done through Treasury, Department of Transport. I can't seem to find an exact figure. Do we know?
We don't know exactly, Michael, but the last report that was done by UCT, the University of Cape Town, by Ross and Townsend, put the number, and that was in 2019, at 417 billion as the backlog. Obviously, that has increased until 2021. So that is the latest figure that we have.
417 billion rand. And Wayne, I want to come back to the work that ARTA has done here, because it's important to place this conversation in the context of what has been an increase in the fuel levy, which is a major component of funding roads, that has been unsustainable and not certainly not an area that government can look to continually hike above inflation into the future in order to plug this gap.
Yeah, look, a decade ago it was 24 billion, so now we're up to 85 billion. It's not ring fenced, so not all of that goes necessarily to roads. It goes into government's coffers. They give some to provinces, some to SANRAL, and some goes via grants to municipalities. Municipalities also funded by ratepayers, and they should be using that funding to road infrastructure. So it's a mix of revenue sources, and then there's revenue that goes to tolling. And one question we've got of SANRAL is really looking for transparency on the concession toll routes, because you can imagine if there's opportunities for the state to be getting more back, especially as these contracts come into their last sort of term. How much profit is being made by the public-private partnerships? What is excessive profit? All of these questions need to be answered. but only when there's transparency. And it comes down to this question, Michael, of transparency. It comes down to that, right down into tenders. Our research shows that we are paying too much for roads. We're overpaying. We've said it again on the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project at 18 billion rand for 186 kilometers. I know there are bridges and interchanges in that. Our research showed that maximum, that should have been a 9 billion rand road upgrade. So what we're doing is we're getting less kilometers for the work. And when you look at local government level, provincial government level, you see tenders going out where people are even paid up front and they do part of the work and then they disappear. What we need to see more of is transparency in the tender process so that the flags can be raised early enough so you don't have fronting companies with no experience being given big contracts and they don't have the technical expertise and the equipment to do the work. We've got to obviously deal with transformation in the industry at the same time, so it's quite complex. But what we are not getting is bang for our buck when it comes to the investment in our roads. We're spending too much and we're not getting that return back. There's too much corruption, too much maladministration. We need more oversight. We need civil society and organizations like these in this room to play a bigger role in saying, look, let's hold people to account so that we can do this job properly. Otherwise, we're going to lose our roads and we can't rely on rail. We have a serious problem. And tourism is a big factor as well, as you just said earlier on.
Yeah, big challenges there. Saeed, from the Bitumen Association's perspective, are you seeing a renewed commitment to increasing transparency? Because SANRAL have been on a very public media campaign recently talking about public-private partnerships, and there's been a lot of talk about a renewed commitment to bringing tenders to market. With that, are we seeing a renewed commitment to increasing transparency and improving governance?
Very difficult to say, but I just want to add on to what Basil was saying about road asset management system. These call it processes are important to understand the state of the road network, because otherwise we'll generalize and we'll see here's a problem or there's a problem. But annually or periodically, it's really required that each road authority make a complete assessment of the condition of the network. And I would like to suggest that these, and if we talk about transparency, that the outcome of these assessments be made public on a regular basis, so that it's visible and everybody can and see what the state of the roads are in a particular area. And by doing so, it will highlight the issues and bring it more to the fore of the general public that uses the road. I would even go further and would add a bit of a competition between road authorities. And one can present an award for the most improved road authority in terms of their road network, or even top for the best in the country. Bring a bit of fun to it, but also make it very, very visible to the general user. And to me, that will go a long way to us being able to have clarity on the state of our roads.
I mean, ideally, what you want is key performance indicators linked to that very evidence, and if authorities are not performing, then you'd like to see accountability and heads rolling. I mean, that's how it should work in any functioning democracy. However, and to Wayne's point, we have this shroud of secrecy, what's going on, who's getting what and why, and very difficult to get through to government departments, through to SANRAL, to find out exactly what is being done to improve the situation. On the issue of tolling, and perhaps back to you on this one, Wayne, because you know, OUTA was really born out of this opposition to urban tolling in the manner that it was introduced. And I recall, you know, well over 10 years ago, the issue was really one of how was it funded? Was it more efficient to rather use a fuel levy versus going out to this very expensive and opaque tender? And I think OUTA was subsequently proved correct. But this process and the way it was handled has meant that there is a strong opposition to tolled roads in urban areas. Is this now off the table? Can we use this model if we need to in future? And what does government do to overcome this opposition?
Well, sadly, electronic tolling is very different to boom-down tolling, which has 100% hit rate, but electronic tolling is a drive now, pay later scheme. And you have to have the administration systems in place to do that properly. You've got to have everybody paying. So we're not opposed to user-based principle. and public-private partnerships. But if they don't work, if they're never going to work, if the administration relies on the efficient post office and 100% of vehicle information in the eNatus registry being correct, then they start to work. Ours, we just didn't even tick any of those boxes. But the big thing around transparency and public engagement, you need public buy-in on systems like that. But when we look at the long-distance tolls, the concessioned ones, the three of them, we're asking some hard questions. How much revenue accrues to those companies, and what are they spending on the maintenance of those roads and the preparation and the building of those roads as well? Why is that important? Well, it's our money. And SANRAL hides behind this fact that we don't have to give it to you because it's outsourced. It's a concession. Go and ask them for the information. Well, they're not going to give us that information. We want to know, are the same companies that their board members sit on both road construction companies as well as the board, where there's a conflict of interest in some of those. And we need to understand, are you going out to tender? Are you doing that properly when it comes to repairing barriers and roads on those routes? Because it just might be that we could be getting R1 billion or more back every year from the concessions than what we currently are, the R86 million a year. So when a state institution doesn't answer questions around transparency, that's a big problem. And going back to this whole issue of transparency, it is the enemy of corruption. And as I've said before, the minute a 20-kilometer road surfacing project comes up and it is five times the price that a normal road construction project of that nature would be, and society was aware of it beforehand, guess what happens? The flags go up quicker and we stop those transactions from taking place. Otherwise, you have what we have. We have shoddy work that's being done, people being paid up front for an entire project, and it doesn't even get started, and then the money's missing. So we need transparency across all fronts, and every institution in this space needs to drive that.
Yeah, we absolutely. Get that to fight this problem. Sunlight, as they say, is the greatest disinfectant when it comes to cleaning out the dirty spot and stain of corruption. Just as we end off on the skills deficit, and, you know, there does appear to be a lot of suspicion around a decision to bring in Cuban engineers in the water sector. A good friend and colleague of mine, Professor Anthony Turton, says there are more than enough skilled water engineers locally for us not to have to look anywhere. And it's not just being scared of Cubans or kind of xenophobic or any of these labels that are attached. It just doesn't make any sense, so it raises suspicion. What are we seeing in the skill space in terms of maintenance for roads, and are we worried that we might be importing Cubans on that front as well, Basil?
Michael, we really hope not, because they definitely are sufficient qualified engineers in South Africa, road engineers in South Africa, maybe not as many in the provincial and municipal area, but from the consulting engineers point of view, there's very skilled consulting engineers with those skills. A lot of work has been happening. A lot of the roads authorities are training up a lot of young engineers coming through their ranks. So we're quite encouraged to see that as well. The training courses that we run, and we run numerous training courses, in excess of about 50 different training courses on road maintenance, construction, and as I say, even road safety audits and things like that as well. We see government sending a lot of the young engineers coming on those training courses. So it is encouraging to see that. Even on the transformation side, you see a lot of young engineers coming through on that field, and which is really encouraging. So there's still a lot of the old guys around that can mentor and help the young engineers. But I think as an industry, we are there to help. As a federation, we offer these programs, and it really it's encouraging to see that we are getting support on that as well.
Well, we'll continue to extend the invitation to SANRAL and the Department of Transport. Very difficult to get them onto this program to talk about the state of the country's road network. But thank you very much to the three of you for shining the spotlight on the big issues. We undoubtedly need to see a lot more transparency when it comes to the way our country's asset stock of roads are managed. Basil Johnson, Operations Director of the SA Road Federation. Saeed Solomon, CEO of the Southern African Bitumen Association. Association, and Wayne Duvenage, Chief Executive Officer of OUTA. Are we on a road to ruin? Judge for yourself.